Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And I'm Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical.
So today we're talking about the book of Ruth. But before we do that, we're going to do the customary thing where we describe to you which one of those things we are. I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. This is Nico. Hey.
I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. And I'm now an atheist. I'm reading the NIV, the New International Version.
And I'm reading the NRSV, New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. And just a reminder, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it is definitely inappropriate for children. And sometimes talks about violence and sex violence. And it's, oh, the Bible is really gross sometimes, you
yes.
guys.
Mm-hmm.
We learned this last week. It's fucked up. Don't let your kids near this.
Yeah.
Keep your kids out of Sunday school, frankly.
Yes.
It's not appropriate for children.
No, no. It should be given a rating of TVMA.
Yes. Rated R.
Mm-hmm.
For rockin'.
All right. So today, we're talking about one of the shortest books in Mr. Bibble here.
Yes. We're talking about everybody's favorite candy bar, Baby Ruth.
Okay. Okay. Which do you like better, the peanut or the choco?
In a Baby Ruth bar? Baby, every element of a Baby Ruth bar combines to make a singular snacking experience.
Okay. Well, I'm not denying that. Look, I'm not denying the fine work of the people at the Mars Candy Bar Corporation.
Picking a favorite part of a Baby Ruth bar is like picking whether you like air or sunshine better.
Mm-hmm.
It's all necessary.
Yeah, I think I like sunshine better.
We're talking about everybody's favorite classic baseball player, Babe Ruth.
I don't know anything about Babe Ruth. What do you know about Babe Ruth?
I don't know. Was he fat?
Well, I think that's a little harsh. We're going to dig him up and
was he married to Marilyn Monroe?
No.
Was he?
See, it turns out I know more about Babe Ruth than you do.
There you go. Okay. But for real now, we're talking about everybody's favorite White Stripes B-side, Red Bowling Ball Ruth.
Okay. We talked about a Five Nation Army the other week, but not a Seven Nation Army, of course.
Talking about everybody's favorite scion of a wealthy but dysfunctional family.
Uh-huh.
Michael Bluth.
That's wrong.
Talking about everybody's favorite smear campaign against a Democratic presidential candidate. Swiftboat Veterans for Truth.
Swiftboat Veterans for Ruth.
Talking about talking about everybody's favorite young adult novel. Phantom Tollbooth.
Okay.
Talking about one half.
I was in a play based on the Phantom Tollbooth when I was very young.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
Who were you?
I want to say Milo. Does that make sense?
Well, that's like the main character. Were you the lead?
I might have been.
You might have been the lead in the play and you don't remember?
I don't remember very clearly, no.
What the hell?
Yeah.
How old were you?
Maybe 10 or something.
Okay. When I was 10, I was the lead in the play, the school play, The Princess and the Pea. But it was The Princess and the Pizza.
Okay. How would you not notice if there was a pizza under your... Doesn't it kind of ruin the...
I did notice. That was the point. I was a very sensitive princess. I could tell all the toppings on the pizza
okay,
through
you
all
tell
the
toppings. I see. I see. That's how it makes sense. Were there peas on the pizza?
I don't think so.
Oh,
no.
It's a missed opportunity.
I think it was... I think it was mainly meats. I think it was pepperoni.
You think it was just peps?
It was just peps, like Channing Tatum likes. But it also had, like, I think anchovies was one.
Okay. I think you'd tell that by the smell. You wouldn't need a super sensitive butt or whatever.
It's a super sensitive everything, babe.
Okay.
That's what made me fit to be the princess.
Sensitivity for your people's plight, I assume?
Yeah, I guess. I don't really remember the plot. But I definitely remember being the lead. And if I feel like if you were the lead, you would remember.
Okay. So I think I was named Milo. That's all I got.
Milo is the name that my old flip phone used to correct your name to when I still had a flip
phone. So in a way, I was Milo all along. Thank you for joining us on Sunday School Dropouts. All right. Miko.
So we're talking about one half of everybody's favorite request from Santa for Christmas. God,
this will never end.
That's listeners, right. A front tooth.
I may die.
We're talking about everybody's favorite synonym for detective.
A sleuth?
Sleuth.
What are you talking about?
Sleuth. We're talking about sleuths.
If they're not going to make sense, can you do them quickly? Let's do this.
Okay, whatever. Whatever. We'll talk about Ruth. We'll talk about Ruth. She's a Moabitess.
And, a Moabiter, yeah.
An ancestress of Jesus. Every single time that it comes up in my Bible, it puts S on the end of everything. My Bible also says this is an exquisitely wrought jewel of Hebrew narrative art.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah. It takes place in the days when the judges ruled.
Yes.
Is what it says.
So this is sort of like floating around in time around judges, maybe during?
Yeah. So some point during the like several judges that we discussed in the last episode, if you've listened to the judges episode, you know that's a time when there's a lot of military back and forth.
True.
Sometimes
military back and forth, as they say.
Sometimes
the president announces a troop surge due to an increase in military back and forth in the conflicted area.
They should use that. That would be a great euphemism. So we know that sometimes Israelites are being subjugated. Sometimes they're the ones doing the subjugating.
True.
And it goes back and forth a lot during the period of time described in the Book of Judges.
Mm-hmm.
So this story takes place during, I guess, a lull in the constant war. It talks about an Israelite's marriage to a Moabitess.
That's right. It's about intermarriage.
Yeah. And Israelites are not supposed to do that.
No.
Because as we know, they immediately start worshiping Baal and Asherah.
They need very few excuses.
Yeah. So they're not supposed to intermarry, or they will definitely get tempted into worshiping idols.
Right. And I remember somebody got speared for having a Moabite girlfriend at one point.
Oh, yeah. Got speared at the same time.
Yeah.
The one spear drove through both of them.
Mm-hmm.
By Eleazar or something.
By Ephaniah? No. I can't remember that dude's name.
That was a great made-up Bible name.
Thank you.
By, let's say, Ephaniah.
Mm-hmm. Prove us wrong. Listeners, we are surrounded by Bibles at the moment. Right.
We've got the Faith Girls! Exclamation mark. Girls with a Z. Mm-hmm. Bible. When I was a teenager, I actually had the teen study Bible.
Was it full of relatable day-to-day advice?
Yeah, the advice was like, don't watch R-rated movies, and like, don't.
And then it have a little quote. It was like Corinthians 10:10.
Well, it would be like in the book, you know, and then there'd be like a little bubble.
If
right?
you want to be like fucking Zipper,
yeah,
remember
yeah, yeah.
not.
And there'd be like a little cartoon of like a girl with like a super perky ponytail, and she would be like, "I'm not having sex before marriage.
I'm part of a harem.
I'm doing a cool pose you can't see. It's like a cool early 2000s pose."
Early 2000s pose?
Yeah, you know, like.
I remember there was a lot of military back and forth then. Man, what a different time. So what else happens in this book?
Okay.
We're about zero words in so far.
That's fine, because there's, we got like all the time in the world. this is a very short book.
Our GD listeners don't have all the time in the world.
They do. We're making them wait, just like I was instructed to wait until after marriage on my teen study Bible. Okay. So we start with an Israelite couple living in Moab.
Mm-hmm.
And their names are Elimelech. That's the husband. It means my God is king.
Mm-hmm.
And Naomi. And apparently that is a variation of the word that means pleasant. In modern Hebrew, when you meet somebody, you say Naim Meod. Like very
I see.
Pleasant, pleased to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently that's what Naomi means. And they have two sons named Malone and Kilion.
Uh-huh.
And they each get married to Moabite women. Kilion gets married
to... It's unclear whether they're tricky Moabite women or not.
Yeah. They're not tricky. Mm. It's actually extremely clear. It's what the entire book.
Okay, I should have said as yet. It's unclear.
Okay, fair enough. So Kilian gets married to Orpah. Now, why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Orpah is Oprah's real name.
Is that true?
Yes, she was named after this character in the Bible.
Oh, interesting.
But everybody always messed it up. So then she started just going by the Oprah thing that people read it as.
Hmm.
Not sure why someone would choose the name Orpah, because A, it sounds weird.
Mm-hmm.
And B, this is like an extremely inconsequential character.
She doesn't say or do anything.
All she
gets married and then...
And then she leaves. She's in there for like a couple of verses.
Yeah.
But hashtag fun fact about Oprah Winfrey, she's actually named Orpah.
Okay.
Which means her company that she owns shouldn't be called Harpo, which is Oprah backwards. It should actually be called...
Hapro.
Oh,
if only we lived in that world.
Yeah. Everything would be different. Mm-hmm. Everything would be so much better. So Naomi's husband, Elimelech, mm-hmm. dies. I think before the sons get married, actually.
Okay.
And the sons get married, but after 10 years, they die as well.
They do.
It doesn't say why, does it?
I think it just says that they die. Although yeah. this could be because of a little bit of that, you know.
That military back and forth.
You never know. Could be they got caught in the thresher, though. Could be they got grounded by the millstone.
The millstone?
I don't know.
The millstone we call life. So now we're stuck with, we have three widows.
Uh-huh.
Naomi and her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth.
So the fact that they're all dead prevents them from doing that fun little death marriage roulette kind of thing that they do.
You know, the death marriage roulette kind of thing. Not going to expand on that right now. If you don't understand what that means, fuck you. Go back and listen to our previous episodes. I don't even know which one it's in. Just listen to all of them and it'll explain biblical law, widows and relatives.
Yeah. So I'm going to cut our listeners a break and say the important thing is
fuck you.
when a man dies and he leaves behind his poor bereaved wife, the most important thing is that a male family member step in and, you know, shtup the wife. So that...
Step and shtup. The old step and shtup.
Step in, you step in, and you shtup. But they can't do that in this case.
So nothing but
both
widows. The brothers are dead.
Mm-hmm.
So Naomi, like, she's living in Moab, but she's from, I guess Canaan, the promised
land. She's from the promised land, somewhere in the promised land.
So she decides to move back there now that her husband and sons are dead. So both her daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, are like, no, we love you. We want to stay with you. And she's like, well, I'm not going to have any more sons. Like, mm-hmm. I can't provide you a husband. I can't provide you like a good life. So you should go back to your own parents' houses and get remarried. And Orpah does that. She gives a tearful goodbye. They do seem to have a really good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Then she leaves. Ruth, on the other hand, will not leave. And she's like, I'm with you now. We're bonded for life.
We ride till we die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she follows Naomi back to Jerusalem.
With the implicit understanding that it will be very difficult for her as a Moabite in Jerusalem.
Oh, no, wait. It's not Jerusalem. It's Bethlehem.
Bethlehem. Excuse me. House of bread. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is ironic because in Bethlehem, they don't have any bread.
That's not true, actually. Bread is going to be like a huge plot point in this
Sorry,
book.
I clenched there a little bit. I reached.
How did you know it was House of Bread? Did you read that in a footnote?
Probably. Okay. You've probably told me that a fucking dozen times.
Oh, when I was showing off my Hebrew skills.
Mm-hmm.
Beit Lechem in Hebrew.
So they get to Bread House.
Yeah, so they get to Bread House just in time for the barley harvest, speaking of bread.
Mm-hmm.
My Bible's footnotes give a really detailed breakdown of the entire barley harvesting process.
Okay.
Do you want to hear it?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Good, because it's boring.
Well.
But I would read it for you if you wanted
I have a sixth sense for boring material.
So Ruth decides that she's going to go into the fields and glean any grain that's dropped.
Right. So Naomi and Ruth get there and they're penniless, essentially. So they have to...
Because they have no men in their lives. All their husbands are dead.
All of their husbands are dead, yes.
Both of their husbands are dead. Plus an additional husband is also dead.
That's true. A bonus husband. Anyway, Ruth decides she's going to go a gleaning. So I had to look up what gleaning was. Did you know what gleaning was?
I did.
How'd you know?
I did from that painter, the gleaners.
The painter?
I'm sorry. The painting? I knew from the painting, the gleaners. And it just, it means like basically if you're poor, you can go into the fields and pick up shit that people accidentally drop as they're harvesting.
Right. Or you go to the fields that like are overgrown or like aren't worth harvesting or whatever and you get the extra stuff.
Yeah. And that's part of the law.
Yes.
As set out in the Torah.
Yes. It's like a real basic ancient welfare system.
Yeah.
It's like when you farm, you like have to leave behind stuff.
So she is going, she's gleaning in a field that belongs to this guy named Boaz.
Mm-hmm.
And Boaz is a relative of Elimelech, who would have been her father-in-law, except that I think he was dead before she married his son.
Got it.
So her like uncle-in-law or like second cousin once removed in-law or something like that.
Perfect. Perfect.
And he... Boaz has heard about Ruth's devotion to her mother-in-law.
Right.
And that she like left her homeland to stay with her mother-in-law.
Because early on a chorus, sort of like an anonymous chorus of women was like, oh, who's that? Is that, oh my God, it's Naomi. She's back, you know?
She's back? She's back and better than ever.
Well, no, she's not better than ever. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe she's back, you know?
She's back and worse than ever.
There we go. That's better. We'll keep that take.
And so he's like really impressed with her devotion.
Mm-hmm.
So he not only lets her keep gleaning, he also like gives her lunch at midday.
He also says like, you should keep gleaning on my fields.
Yeah.
Because you know why? I like my guys here that are doing the harvesting, like I trust them. Yeah. I'll tell them to stay away from you, which is a kind of scary implication.
Yeah, explicitly he says, I told the men not to touch her.
Mm-hmm.
I told the men not to touch you.
Thank God for Boaz. You know?
That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah.
That we can be raped at any time.
Uh-huh.
That's like when I was on a plane recently and the two guys sitting next to me offered me some Cheez-Its and said, don't worry, it's only laced with cheese. And I was like,
Well, it's colorful, guys.
I like wasn't expecting you to roofie Cheez-Its, but now I'm suspicious.
Yeah. How could they degrade such a fine American product?
Dude, it's a really high quality snack. This is a pro snackies podcast.
So Boaz tells his boys to lay off.
Yeah.
And then he lays out a nice feast for her for lunchtime. He's like, come on out from the fields. You've been working so hard. You know, like you deserve to have a tasty lunch. And the lunch they lay out sounds pretty good.
It's like roasted grains and shit.
He says, dip some bread in this old wine.
Oh, yeah. Well, like wine vinegar, mine said.
Wine vinegar and oil on the bread. Yep. Sounds great. It's a classic.
Yeah.
It's a Mediterranean classic.
Plus, it's all organic.
That's true.
There's no pesticides. There's no GMOs.
When the table is on the farm, I mean, like.
Yeah, this is the most farm to table you can get.
Yeah, it's like farm and table are one.
And he also gives her water.
Mm-hmm.
Which is important, for like 75% water or whatever. Got to keep that hydration level up.
You certainly do. You certainly do.
Are y'all drinking enough water, everybody?
Write in and tell us how much water you're drinking.
Don't do that. But do drink more water than you're drinking right
now.
Call
your mom.
So that day she goes back to Naomi,
mm-hmm.
Because that's where she's living with Naomi. And she's got hella gleaned barley,
mm-hmm.
22 liters worth, it says.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, so like 11 soda bottles of barley.
I don't know what that means, but yeah, it's enough. Mine made it clear that it was enough for several days.
Oh. And Ruth tells Naomi what happened.
Met this great guy. His name's Boaz.
And Naomi's like, oh shit, that's Boaz? Because let me tell you, he's related to my...
He's got B.O. from A to Z.
that dude, it's got a smell on him.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't invented deodorant yet, so I don't know what the fuck we're going to do about it.
You know that Outkast album, Stankonia? It's about Boaz.
It's about Boaz. No, she tells her that she's really psyched because Boaz is related to her dead husband, and he is a kinsman redeemer. The kinsman redeemer was responsible for protecting the interests of needy members of the extended family.
Oh, I see.
E.g. to provide an heir for a brother who had died, to redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside the family, to redeem a relative who had been sold into slavery, and to avenge the killing of a relative.
I thought any relative could provide redemption. I didn't know that it was a role.
I mean, like, I think anyone can be one, but it's like designated to a person.
Got it.
But I mean, look, I'm not gonna claim that I understand this system. So who fucking knows?
All right.
But my Bible does specify that avenger and kinsman redeemer are translations of the same Hebrew word.
Oh, interesting. So you think its function might be more on the vengeful side than the redemption side?
No, I just think that the Avengers should be renamed the Kinsman Redeemers.
Yeah. Well, the Redeemers isn't a bad name. I would drop the Kinsman.
Well, I wouldn't.
Kinsman, however, is a decent name for like a 60s-style British invasion rock group.
The Kinsman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Or like, if you have a singer, like, you know, like Tommy Jones and the Kinsman. Except
Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah, you know.
I didn't know he could sing.
Yeah.
He's a real song and dance man.
It's a
triple threat.
It's like Steve Martin and Woody Allen, and he just like tours with his band sometimes.
Tommy Lee and the Kinsmen?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Great. Glad we could work this out.
Does he do like Tin Pan Alley classics, or what does he do?
He does fucking like biblical readings, you know, like chanting.
That sounds awful.
Well, that's what a kinsman redeemer has to do.
Chanting. What do the kinsmen do? Backup chanting?
Yeah, backup chanting. Plus they're, you know, playing like the shofar. They're playing the like silver trumpets.
Silver trumpets.
Yeah.
So just trumpets.
No, you know, the special silver trumpets that Moses had to learn how to make.
Yeah.
I don't think those are real trumpets.
They don't have valves or anything?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I think they just play one note.
I know.
Do you?
No.
Do you?
No.
How much do you know about biblical trumpets?
Let's get back to Ruth.
Fuck.
So Naomi is very excited that Ruth has met Boaz, not only because he's a kinsman redeemer, but because she thinks she might spy a match.
Well, that's like what a kinsman redeemer does.
Oh, okay.
So, but so Ruth keeps hanging around Boaz's fields, just, you know.
Gleaning out.
Yeah, gleaning the shit out of that barley.
That's right. And she even keeps gleaning into the wheat harvest. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Barley and wheat, both. That's what they call it, the house of bread.
she's a barley and a wheat kind of girl, if you know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm saying.
Naomi wants Ruth to marry Boaz.
Yeah. So she's going to give her some dating advice.
Uh-huh.
You know, one cool trick that daters don't want you to know about.
Daters?
Yeah. You know, singles in your area don't want you to know about.
Why wouldn't they want you to know about
Chat with them right now.
What?
We'll get back to that advice after the break.
Okay.
Chill out. Listen to some music. We'll be back with hot dating tips from 1000 BC.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we're talking about the Book of Ruth.
So you teased us with some ancient dating advice before you left. You may not have said that. I may have just filled in the blanks because I wanted to be excited about it, but...
I'm pretty sure I said that.
Okay.
Hashtag ancient dating advice. So, basically Naomi, who to recap...
Basically Naomi.
She wants Ruth, her daughter-in-law, to get married to her dead husband's kinsman redeemer, Boaz.
Uh-huh.
So she gives her this advice. And she says, so they're in the harvest, as we know.
That's right.
They just finished the barley harvest. They're onto the wheat harvest.
Right.
And so Naomi says, tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. You know how men get.
Uh-huh.
When they're widowing barley on the threshing floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, Boaz is a busy man. Work, 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 you know.
So she says, like, get all dolled up. Like, take a bath. Put on perfume. Wear your cute dress. You know, like, wear those
Your
little...
nicest gleaning outfit.
Yeah, wear those little heels. And go down there to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you're there. And when he goes to sleep on the threshing floor, apparently, what you want to do is uncover his feet. And lie down, and he will tell you what to do.
That's the advice she gets.
Okay, I was married to your son for like 10 years. Like, I know that's not what sex is. I know what the birds and the bees are.
I know about Deborah and Giles.
Yeah. Yeah. My Bible's footnotes actually say, although Naomi's instructions may seem forward, the moral integrity of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz is never in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're appealing to his, quote, kinsman obligation. And not just being slutty. So,
I wanted to say, because this was Bibble, we know that feet never means feet, right?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what your Bible says?
Absolutely, yeah.
She uncovers his dick?
Yeah.
What?
Feet never mean, I mean, like... Remember Zipporah touching touching the foreskin to Moses' feet?
Yeah.
Those weren't his feet.
Oh, my God. So, oh, my God. This changes everything.
Well, it doesn't change that much.
Well, so she goes in there and pulls his dick out, like, while he's asleep. That's, like, sexual assault.
But it does have echoes of Lot, the father of the Moabites.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's very interesting. Well, so anyway, Ruth does this. She goes and uncovers...
Something.
some part of Boaz's body. We won't tell which.
She found something.
And he wakes up in the middle of the night and is like, what the
my
fuck?
My dear, those aren't my feet.
And she's like, hey, psst. Will you marry me? Seems more like a prank than like a marriage proposal.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, of all like the proposal stories that you've ever heard, did any of them involve going to somebody's workplace in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
uncovering something while they're asleep, and then just being like, hey.
And then just lying there?
Yeah.
Creepily?
Yeah.
No, they haven't.
And Boaz... I at first I read this like him saying like, I'm really flattered, but why don't we find you a better husband?
So can we not do this at night on the threshing floor?
I was like asleep.
But
had
no.
My dick like inside my pants.
When his feet inside his shoes. Or his dick in his shoes.
I had my dick inside my shoes. I put a shoe on my dick when I sleep.
I put a dick in my shoes.
I don't want anyone else to know that. So please don't tell anyone.
But he's not actually upset because of that. He's upset because, or he's not upset, but he like turns her down.
Yeah. He says, well, there's a more closely related kinsman redeemer that by law, you need to marry that person, not
right.
me.
And so Boaz pulls a little trick. Sort of.
I'm like really unclear about like if this is a trick or not.
It's not a trick. I think he's just like he knows how it's going to shake out and he like uses the law for his own benefit and to like it's just the right thing to do. And what he does is he calls the other kinsman, the other KR,
Yeah.
Kinsman Redeemer. And gets them together in front of all the elders and whatever, and is like, hey, just so we're clear.
Well, Naomi's back from Moab.
Yeah, you might not have heard. Naomi's back in town.
She's selling her land.
Yeah, her son's land.
Yeah, the land that belonged to, like, her husband and her sons.
Right.
Who are all dead now.
And it's like, it's your obligation to, like, purchase that land to keep it in the community.
And the other guy's like, cool, yeah.
Yeah,
I'll take extra land.
I love
cool.
land.
And he's like, oh, one more thing. Who says that, Columbo?
Just one more question. That makes sense.
And you also have to marry this chick, Ruth. That's just...
And he's like, whoa, no thanks.
Because that'll, like, yeah. No that'll... can do. That's going to mess up my inheritance somehow.
Because then, he has to split his inheritance with that of, like, other people's or something. Like, his existing kids will have to split the inheritance with the kid, whatever yeah, like, kids he like, gets from.
Whatever. The upshot is... Yeah, yeah. That Boaz is going to marry Ruth.
He the other guy gives a hard pass on that. Yeah. He's like, pass.
And they seal the deal by the other kinsman redeemer giving Boaz one sandal.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
Did that have echoes of the sandalless family?
Yeah, the unsandaled, uh-huh. Right? Yeah. So actually in the actual text of the Bible, like not in a footnote or anything, it says like that's how people used to do business.
As was
like,
the style in the time.
Yeah, yeah. To seal a deal, you put an onion on your belt and give one sandal to the other person. But in Deuteronomy, we had if a kinsman redeemer basically won't marry his brother's widow.
That's right.
Then that's a punishment that he gets one sandal taken away from him and his family is known as the unsandaled.
Yeah.
So it's like the same...
It's the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing. Except,
but it seems to be okay that this 1 KR passes on the
thing. Well, it's like in one case, the taking one sandal is like a form of shaming.
Uh-huh.
And in one case, it's a form of...
Just that's how, like, you do business.
Yeah, just doing business. So it's weird.
So maybe this is like a reflection of what the tradition of unsandaling like grew into, you know?
Yeah, or something. Or they were just like trying to justify. They're like, okay, like we know there's this weird custom.
Yeah.
Maybe it was this. I don't know.
There's a lot of talk about sandal this, unsandaled that, et cetera, et cetera.
So Boaz marries Ruth, buys the land from Naomi, and Boaz and Ruth end up having a son.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is really excited about this for Naomi. And like not for Ruth or Boaz, but just for Naomi. And they're like, oh, your daughter-in-law is so amazing. Like, she's better than having seven sons.
Mm-hmm. But that's that same chorus. That's everything. That's that same chorus of women that was like, Naomi looks bad.
I feel like you're, like, maybe attributing some things to this chorus of women that they didn't actually say.
Really?
I feel like you're maybe making them a little cattier than they actually were.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
But it is weird. This baby is not actually related to Naomi by blood at all.
No.
In any way. I mean, unless she was like her husband's second cousin or something, which is very
it's possible.
Common, so.
But it's her responsibility to like improve the household or whatever. Like she becomes a part of her husband's household when she marries into it.
Right. So this is like considered to be like her... Actually, they say it's like her son, mm-hmm. even though it's actually her like step-grandson or something.
Yes, step-grandson.
And the chorus says, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, this is a story that we had to cut from our Genesis episode for time.
That's right.
But it's a weird one. It's interesting. Should we tell it?
Yes.
So Judah is one of Jacob's 12 sons,
mm-hmm.
like one of the 12 tribes of Israel.
That's right.
So brother to... Joseph, brother to Benjamin, brother to Reuben and all
Levi,
all those
guys.
And in the book of Genesis, he has three sons. The first one is named Ur.
Mm-hmm.
And Ur marries a woman, but God says that Ur is wicked. It doesn't specify why. Maybe he was like worshiping Baal or whatever.
Probably had a stupid name.
Yeah. And God kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So now his widow marries the next son because that's how things work. If your brother dies, then you have to take on his wife as your own.
Which is kind of like a weird semi-punishment because, like, all of the kids that you have with your brother's widow are officially your brother's kids.
Right.
They're not your kids.
And that's exactly the problem here, because the second son is named Onan, and you may have heard of Onanism, mm-hmm. or the sin of Onan, to refer to masturbation. But what actually the sin of Onan is that he is having sex with his new wife, his brother's widow, but he doesn't like the fact that any children they have will be his brothers. They'll be counted as brothers and not him.
Right. He's like, why put in the work if I'm not going to get the kids?
So he always pulls out and spills his seed upon the ground. So actually, Onanism is not masturbation. It's pulling out.
Yep.
So next time you're jerking off, remember, just be like, this is not the sin of Onan.
And if that works for you, just thank
us. Just roll with it.
Yeah. Just say a little prayer for us.
And then because he does that, God kills him for pulling out. So then there's a third brother and the wife should go to that brother, except that he's too young to get married. And so Judah, the father, says, I'll give him to you when he's old enough to get married.
Says to the widow.
Yeah. Yes. The widow's name Tamar. And so then Tamar gets fed up with this and she disguises herself as a shrine prostitute or a temple prostitute. Mm-hmm. And she goes up to Judah and has sex with him as like under the guise of a prostitute. And
but for her payment, she says, will you send me a young lamb?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, sure. And she's like, well, in the meantime, can you give me like some collateral?
Right. On this young lamb that you're going to be sending me.
So she asks for his like seal and his staff.
Right. Because he's apparently the mayor.
Yeah. He's,
Question mark.
Whatever.
Who has a seal and a staff?
Well, he's probably like the mayor of something. The
mayor of Pope Town.
Yeah. He's one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So like, whatever. Anyway. Gives her.
Whatever.
Look, I am not qualified to talk about mayoral politics in any United States city, let alone.
These aren't politics. These are trappings.
Trappings?
Mm-hmm.
You're trappings.
So Judah sleeps with Tamar.
And then Tamar gets pregnant.
Yes.
And
Judah's kinsmen come to him and say,
oh, like your daughter-in-law got pregnant.
And he's like, what?
Put her to death. Burn her to death. Yep. That's the punishment. Except that then she's like, the guy who impregnated me gave me this. And she pulls out the seal and the staff. And his reaction is immediately, well.
Yeah, I assume he cracks a wry smile and
he's like
hey,
oh, you got me.
You got me.
I think the exact quote in the Bible is like, she is more righteous than I.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the son that Tamar has by Judah is named Perez, mm-hmm. or Perez. So that's its own weird, very weird interlude in Genesis. It's like presented out of chronological order.
Yes. And I think
why we ended up cutting it for time in our Genesis episode.
Right. Because it doesn't have anything to do with anything.
And it's just very weird to think about that this woman had sex with two brothers and their father.
And it's also weird because like Judah keeps his youngest from her even when the youngest comes of age, because he's like, I don't want my youngest and last remaining son to marry this fucking black widow, you know?
That's true, yeah. He's like,
she's a curse, you know?
He's like, my youngest son's probably gonna pull out too and then God's gonna kill him.
Yeah.
But so they have the son Perez. Tamar bears Perez, and that's what they're saying to Naomi. That's what this chorus of women is saying to Naomi in the Book of Ruth. May your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah.
Right.
But it actually turns out that that's more than just metaphorical, because according to the lineage at the end of the Book of Ruth,
it's 10 generations from Perez to the kid.
Yeah. So Perez is a direct ancestor of Boaz.
Right.
Which makes no sense chronologically. like the timing does not seem to make sense, because many, many, many generations have passed during the Book of Judges. Maybe it's like at the very beginning of the Book of Judges.
Who knows?
Even then, many generations are supposed to have passed between like Joseph in Egypt and Moses, and then more generations have passed between Moses and this generation.
Yeah.
Well, in
and
any
then,
case.
And then whether they're like old Testament generations of like 150 years
yeah.
or whether they're new generations.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, Perez is apparently direct ancestor of Boaz. And so Boaz and Ruth have this son, Obed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Obed is the father of Jesse, who's the father of David.
Right.
And David, of course, is King David. We're going to see a lot about him later on in the Bible. And he's also an ancestor of Jesus.
Mm.
So this whole mess apparently leads to Jesus.
Right. Well, the whole mess, and we can talk about Ruth as a whole now that we've plowed through all three pages of it.
Yeah. Also, this all was 6 pages long, and we've just spent like 45 minutes talking about six mm-hmm. pages.
But this whole mess is like about conversion in a weird way, right? Because mm-hmm. there was no like official conversion. Like Ruth never converts or anything, even though she's a Moabite.
Yeah. Well, we certainly don't see it if she...
Right.
If she converts to whatever they were calling Judaism at this point in history.
Right.
It's not detailed.
But the sort of implication of the story is that even though she is a Moabite and she wasn't raised like worshiping the Israelite God, and she just sort of marries into it mm-hmm. and then eventually ends up in Israel because of that arrangement, she can still be like a godly woman.
Yeah.
You know, and like favored by God.
Yeah.
Obviously, because her lineage goes on to be like favored by God and yeah. turns into David.
And turns into Jesus.
So I think it's kind of this weird, it's like semi-legal precedent, like partly legal precedent.
Yeah.
Especially because it includes gleaning, and like gleaning has like specific mentions in the Deuteronomical laws.
And so does all this like kinsman redeemer stuff.
Yeah, it's all very.
Yeah, very technical.
But it's also literary in a certain sense, in that it's supposed to like create some characters that link part of the story, like part of this judge's story, to like the next part of the history.
Yeah.
Know?
And of all the books we've read, mm-hmm. It does read the most like it's just a story.
Yeah. I feel like there are a couple other stories in nestled within other books that are like similar in style to this.
Uh-huh.
But this being its own book and its own self-contained little structure is certainly the most complete of those.
Yeah. It's also interesting that like she becomes a godly woman, not even through like devotion to God. Like it never talks about her relationship with God or her style of worship or anything.
The only person that addresses God like directly in this book is Naomi. When she comes back into town, back into Bread Town, and she says
Bread House.
Bread House, excuse me. Bread Ho. We call it.
Bread Ho.
Bread Ho. She comes back into town and she's like, people are like, oh, is that Naomi? And she's like, well, I mean, you'd be better off calling me Mara because of how God has been treating me. And Mara is Hebrew
Mara means, bitter.
Bitter.
So it went from being Naomi, which means pleasant, mm-hmm. to...
Well, she's basically like, God is treating me like shit. Like, both my sons died.
My husband.
And now I'm back here with nothing, you know? Which is fair enough, I guess. But it's interesting that she sort of like, you know, turned away from God, or was at least pissed enough to speak against him, but still ended up being favored.
Yeah, I guess that is interesting. And then Ruth, like, is favored just because of her devotion to Naomi.
Yes.
Not because of a devotion to God, per se.
Right. Which is an interesting thing, because I guess it's about, like, how conversion is more than just necessarily saying the right prayers or, like, performing the sacrifices in the correct way, confusingly.
You may be giving it too much credit. I don't know.
Fair enough. That was sort of the message that I got, because nobody even burnt anything in this book. Can you believe that?
That's true. I mean, I think that you're taking from it a message that's like really a valuable message in modern day society, mm-hmm. or like a valuable message for like an individual reader to take from it.
Mm.
I don't know if that's really what the person who wrote this meant, but I think you are taking from it a valuable message.
Oh, good. Well, it's mine and you're never getting it.
Ah, crap.
But at the very least, it establishes that like intermarriage is okay as long as everybody ends up worshiping the Israelite
God. Yeah. As long as we're not all skipping around the Asherah pole.
Sure. Although that does sound very pleasant.
Doesn't it? Nothing like a nice spring day jaunt around the Asherah pole.
Speaking of which, what are you doing tomorrow? You want to hit the Asherah pole after that? I hear they put one up in Dolores Park.
Dude, actually, that would be great. Like, they should put a Nashua pole up in Dolores Park. Like, I think it would be very popular.
They might run into some, you know, separation of church and state things. Like, they can't officially, you know, condone worship of Asherah.
Like, on public whatever.
Just, can I just put up my Dagon statue and we'll be done with it?
Yeah. You just know? Like, let me put up my little altar to Baal. Mm-hmm. Y'all are going to put the Ten Commandments in the courthouse. I'm just going to put my Dagon statue in Dolores Park.
So I think it's probably about that time that we rate this book.
Rate this book.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So how would you rate the Book of Ruth, aka How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Mom?
I will give it 6 out of 7 uncovered feet.
Ooh. Sounds good.
I mean, it was great because it was, hey. It was great because it was like, it was short. It was like a story with a narrative through line.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, we didn't get bogged down in any like lists.
True.
I was raised to believe that this is like kind of a feminist book of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it was ever presented to me with that word, mm-hmm. but
this is something for the ladies.
Yeah, it was like, this is, this is something for the ladies.
It's like Magic Mike XXL.
And Magic Mike XXL is what heterosexuality was supposed to be before Adam fucked everything up and blamed Eve.
It's an interesting theology you've constructed for yourself there.
And it's the only important one.
Peps only, please.
For the record, I am not attracted to Channing Tatum at all. But I do find him very charming. It was like presented as, you know, woman-centric and as being like about what role women can have in Christianity mm-hmm. or like in the church. And, you know, reading it now, that's not really what it, like, it wasn't especially feminist. It was still about, like, men's inheritance rights.
Yeah, and about how they're important even after they die.
Yeah.
Like, you become a piece of property.
And how the women are just, like, vessels for the reproduction of, like, men's inheritance rights. Yeah. But the relationship between Ruth and Naomi is still very, I think that's very lovely.
It is.
I mean, if you ever died, I would probably hang out with your mom.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I guess I'm just going to dock it like 1 point for,
being in the Bible.
for not like quite living up to my, feminist expectations of it.
Oh.
So yeah, 6 out of 7 uncovered quote unquote feet. How would you rate this book?
I would give it 7 out of 8 sandal swap and kinsmen.
Oh,
for a lot of the same reasons that you would. It's a very nice, self-contained story. I like the fact that there was no sacrifices in this one.
Yeah.
And especially no drama over sacrifices, the correct or incorrect way to do them, the correct or incorrect time to do them, the correct or incorrect people that are supposed to do them.
Yeah. I
get kind of tired of that, honestly. And God's whim seems to be less flighty in this book.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, he's not like changing his mind every step of the
way.
Yeah,
he's not like interfering and being like, well, you thought you were cute, huh?
Yeah, you turned away from me for a moment. Yeah?
Guess what's going to happen now?
That's right. It's like the intro to this book in my Bible says all the characters are good, you know? And they're almost like competing to see who's more righteous, you know?
Mm.
They're just like showing respect to each other and they're like doing their best.
I mean, my Bible also says that, but like, they're like, righteousness is never in question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's okay that Ruth uncovers Boaz's feet, which now that I know that that actually means his two dicks.
His donger. Yeah.
Then that's even more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, she's, like you said, she's been married before.
She knows what's up.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to dock at a point. Just because I don't think I can give it a perfect, you know, I can't just hand out 8 out of 8 sandal swapping kinsmen like that.
You don't think it was an exquisitely wrought jewel of Hebrew narrative art?
Well, I'm not denying that it was an exquisitely wrought jewel. But surely, every jewel has an imperfection.
I mean, like, when I read that in the, like, preface, I was, like, that really, like, got my expectations up. And then I was, like, you know, like,
it's a wrought jewel, but exquisitely wrought? I don't think so. Anyway, does that justify my choice enough?
Yes. Yeah.
Should I justify my love now?
No, we're in 2016. That's in the past.
Okay. Wait, where is the song that I don't have to...
Okay, so anyway. So was this like our favorite book thus far?
This is our favorite book so
far.
Yeah,
I think this is... We've both given this the highest rating.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was honestly just about like decent people like trying to do their best.
Yeah, it was
kind of
like,
trying circumstances.
Yeah, it was the closest to like natural realism, like a la Flaubert that we're going to get.
Jesus, with the MFA and you're pulling off this stuff.
Any English major knows.
First of all, his name is Flaubert. So we've rated the book. We talked about the book. We introduced ourselves.
We tasted the book. We smelled the book.
Took a break. So I think that's it. I think that's it for the show.
Okay.
So, everybody, here's what you can do if you want to get in touch with us. We have an email address. The email address is contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. Coincidentally, sundayschooldropouts.lol is also our website.
What are the odds?
Can you fucking believe that?
Can you fucking believe it?
God.
We're also on Twitter, @sunschooldrop.
Mm-hmm. Lauren runs it. She's very funny, so you should follow it.
We're on Facebook. Sorry. I shut down in the face of a compliment. We're also on Facebook. I think the URL is Sunday School Drop as well, but you can just like search for Sunday School Dropouts.
Sure.
You'll know it's the right one if it has an amazing logo
done
by Elise Carlton of Peace Dove smoking a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Elise for our beautiful logo. And thank you to Nico for all of our music and all of our sound engineering. People keep telling us that we have good radio voices. We don't. We sound hideous, but Nico engineers us to sound real good.
That's right.
So that is all for the Book of Ruth. We'll be back next week with the Book of 1 Samuel.
And like always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to get in touch via any of the methods that we just described, or you can write a letter to our hidden P.O. box, the number for which is encoded
in the Bible.
In the Bible. That's
right. Do you know Kabbalah? Do you know numerology? You're going
to
need it.
You already know the answer then. So I look forward to seeing your letters and presents.
And your numerological divinations.
Mm-hmm. So that'll do it for us this week on Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.